Hi there, and welcome back to the Hugo's There podcast. I'm your host, Seth Heasley, and I'm reading the Hugo winners one guest at a time. My guest for this episode is Lisa McCarty, and we are going to be discussing Barrayar by Lois McMaster Bujold, which won the 1992 Hugo Award for Best Novel. So Lisa, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Seth. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So where might people know you from?
People might know me from the Narrated podcast, which is a podcast about audiobooks. It's been going for about 4 years now, and the host, Scott Ullery, was also your guest for episode 22, The Mule.
Yes.
And I actually just joined the Narrated team last summer, and I've been having a blast with it. Nice. The podcast it's not specific to sci-fi and fantasy, but it leans that way because of our interests.
Yeah. Scott also authored a very good quiz on the Incomparables game show recently. So what's your history as a science fiction fan? You mentioned that you lean toward science fiction and Narrated. Is that because of you, because of Scott?
Both, for sure. I mean, I got involved because Scott and I were reading a lot of the same books, I noticed. We've known each other for many years.
Okay.
So my kind of backstory with science fiction and fantasy, my parents read me the Narnia and the Lord of the Rings books when I was around 5 or 6. Mm. My grandfather introduced me to sci-fi TV, Doctor Who, and Star Trek around that same age. I used my 1 hour of TV per day in elementary school to watch the science fiction hour on a local TV station that rotated between Star Trek, Buck Rogers, and the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
And I also loved Star Trek The Next Generation when it came out, and I spent most of middle school reading Next Generation novelizations. Mm. I think the first adult sci-fi I read was, which I picked out when my 6th grade English teacher said that I should be reading more challenging books, was Millennium by John Varley.
Oh, okay.
And then I got in trouble for bringing it to school because it was inappropriate.
Right, yeah. That one's funny because it's based on a short story. It's expanded from a short story. Mm-hmm. Interesting movie, too.
Yeah, Peter, I never saw Peter the movie. Weller.
Yeah, we covered that one on Take Me to Your Reader.
Oh, okay.
So that was fun.
I should check that out.
Yeah, that's funny about the science fiction hour of TV, because we definitely had that in Anchorage growing up. It was what time of the day was it on for you?
It was prime time. I think it was like 6 to 7.
Okay,
like that.
For that makes sense. For Anchorage, it was 5 p.m., which mm-hmm. was an hour behind the West Coast, and because I figure it was 6 o'clock on the West Coast. But yeah. Definitely lots of Buck Rogers, lots of Trek. I think Battlestar Galactica for us was like Sunday nights was when that aired. That was appointment television for us.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So did you happen to tally up how many Hugo winners you've read?
I did. I have read 35 of them.
Okay. And you were saying before we were recording that you were stubbornly trying to knock out a few before we recorded.
I did. Yeah, I think, if you need the sort of full disclosure, I think before last year I had read 22 that
okay,
I just
wow,
sort of read along the way mm-hmm. as I was, you know, as they came out or because I'd heard good things about them.
Right.
Then last year was when I really got interested in sort of all things Hugo. It's the first year that I voted on the Hugos.
Mm, me too.
Cool.
Nice. So why did you choose Barrayar?
So the summer before my freshman year of high school, so this is going to date me exactly, I subscribed to Analog Magazine, and the first issue that I received had the first installment of Barrayar in it.
Okay.
And I fell in love with it immediately. Although I have to say, I have been pronouncing it wrong for two-thirds of my life. Good thing I listened to the audiobook in preparing for this episode, because I have been saying Barrayar. So I'll probably slip up at some point in this episode.
Yeah, I figured that's covered under regional accents, even on the world of Barrayar. So.
Well, I did check Lois McMaster Bujold's blog and confirmed that it is, in fact, Barrayar.
Okay. Yeah, this is one of those ones where for years when I'd go into the audiobook section of my library just down the street here for books on tape, if you want to date mm-hmm. me, it was always the first one on the shelf that I would see when I'd go in, and I had no idea what it was. I'm like, what's Barrayar? I don't know what that is. That sounds mm-hmm. very science fiction-y, but never even picked it up, never thought about it. At that point, I was working my way through all the Ender books, so I was just looking to see if they had one of those.
Right.
And like Clive Cussler and some other things. But yeah, I always saw it. And so I've always been aware of it. And so when I saw it was on the list, I thought, okay, I'll finally get to get to that one. So No, you said this one was in that issue of Analog, and it's been a favorite of yours ever since?
It has, yes. I fell in love with it immediately, and I read it many times during my teens and 20s. I even read it in translation a couple times because I like to use books that I know well for learning foreign languages.
Oh, nice.
And so this is actually the first time that I've read it since having kids. It's probably been about 15 years since the last time I reread it. And so it definitely, 45-year-old me got something very different out of it than 14-year-old me did. And
yeah,
I will,
you
know, I'll talk about that more as we get into the spoiler section too.
Mm-hmm. I think I read it first as like a 46-year-old. So a couple years ago in doing the homework for the VOR game.
Mm-hmm.
So how about we start the non-spoiler discussion by talking about like a quick non-spoiler-ish pitch for this one, maybe where it fits in the VOR Kosigan saga?
Sure. So so the title, Beriar, is the name of an Earth-like planet that was colonized by humans who then lost touch with the rest of humanity for a while. And during that time, they developed a socially conservative kind of feudal society. And the main character, Cordelia, is from a settlement called Baited Colony, which is a much more egalitarian society. And in a previous novel, Shards of Honor, she was thrown together during a planetary survey mission with a Beriaran Lord Errol VOR Kosigan from one of the ruling families. All of them have last names that start with VOR. And they fell in love, and she ended up leaving her home planet for his. And as this story starts, she's going through some serious culture shock. And meanwhile, the Beriaran Emperor is dying, and his grandson, an heir, is only 4 years old. And Cordelia's husband, Errol, is appointed by the dying emperor to be the regent until his grandson is old enough to rule. So this middle-aged couple who are both burnt out and just want to hide somewhere and enjoy each other for a while end up drawn into the center of this dangerous political intrigue.
Yes. Yeah, it's the interesting thing with the VOR Kosigan novels is they straddle so many different genres. She dips her fingers into lots of different genres. I feel like Shards of Honor is like a science fiction romance almost, with some horrifying stuff in it, where this one is much more like your, like an espionage novel or a spy novel kind of thing.
Right. And there's also some almost fantasy-like elements because the world is more of, because the world had sort of regressed and there's,
right.
you know, horses and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, counts and lords.
Right, counts and lords like and horses, yes.
Yes, so. And the subjugation of women, of course, you know.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because, I mean, you know, science fiction is, of course, about the era that it's being written in also.
Right,
and,
yes.
And so there's, you know, a lot of exploration of tensions in, you know, 1990s U.S. society is being explored here also.
Yeah, I'd be interested to pull on that string a little bit. I hadn't really thought of it in that context, but it is important to set novels in the context that they were written. So overall thoughts on this one? Sounds like you're a huge fan.
I am a huge fan. I also wanted to mention before I get into thoughts that the Hugo Girl podcast did their February 2022
yes.
episode about Beriar. So I haven't listened to it yet. I think you haven't either, right?
No, I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I kind of wanted to have our separate discussion about it and see how the two compare so that I'm really looking forward to listening to it because I really enjoy their take on the Hugo Winners.
Yeah, it's fun because like I love it when we cross over because they recently, I think their next episode that they're going to put out probably about the same time this one goes up is for Ringworld.
Right.
And, you know, I discussed that novel with another dude and there's definitely things in there that we're like, if you had a problem with this part, I totally get it. But for us, the novel still worked. But I'm very curious how many times the book went flying across the room for them. Yeah, this is one where, you know, I noted it. My library system has all the audiobooks for the VOR Kosigan saga. And so when I was getting ready to do the VOR game, I asked Dan, you know, hey, what should I do? And he recommended Shards of Honor, Beriar, The Warrior's Apprentice, and you know, a couple of novellas. And so I listened to the audiobooks of, you know, basically all the way up to the VOR game. Then I read the VOR game. Then I listened to the audiobook. And then I listened to all the rest of them. But I kind of noted that, you know, I had to do this one for homework for the VOR game, but it was a ton of fun. And so I'd been looking forward to, I bought this one for Kindle a long time ago, just because I knew eventually we were going to circle back to it. And it's just delightful. It's so good.
And it is. I fell in love with this book, as I said, immediately the first time I read it. And unlike some of my other beloved books from my youth, this one did stand the test of time on rereading. Nice. I was so glad to see that.
Yeah. That definitely is a thing that sometimes happens and sometimes doesn't.
Yep. It's a really nice balance of interesting characters and action and world building. And there's a nice balance of humor and drama. I think it's...
Yeah,
it's lighthearted, but you know, it's in a nice place on the spectrum between serious and lighthearted, I think.
Yeah. The other thing is, it's pretty fast paced. There's a couple spots where it slows down a little bit, but you know, the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 chapters, just, you know, I read them in one sitting.
Right.
Partially because I was just I'd been super busy and hadn't been able to get to the book, and I'm like, I got to finish this tonight, and but it, you know, I couldn't put it down at that point. Because the end of the book is very exciting. I am honestly blown away by the fact that this is a prequel novel, that this book was written out of order. I don't know if Bujold like wrote out everything that she wanted to do and then was like, oh, eventually I'll get back to doing that or what, but it fits so perfectly in the internal chronology of the books. I have a hard time believing that it wasn't written in that order.
I mean, all of this backstory had to be there because, I mean, it's how Miles begins, and then he's the main character in most of the other books. So, you know, it has, you know, there's the explanation, you know, his backstory is so important to him as a character. And so she had to have worked all that out. It seems like the Shards of Honor came first. Shards of Honor was actually the first thing that was published.
Yeah, it was.
I reread Shards of Honor and Bariar for this, preparing for this episode. I haven't reread the Miles books in many years.
Okay.
But I did enjoy those also.
It's definitely nice also to occasionally have one of these books that's on the shorter end, and this book isn't super long. And so yeah, big fan of that as well.
Yes.
And like you said, right, the characters are so great. You know, Cordelia is awesome. And then somebody like Bothari, who... You think about who he was in Shards of Honor, and he's so much better developed now in this book, and then in some of the other books as well. And the you know, the supporting characters, Drushnikovi and or is Drushnikova?
Drushnikovi.
They shorten it to Drew so often that I forgot what the full name was. And Kudelka and other people. Yeah. Just really, really well drawn characters. And it's so smart, I think, to have a fish out of water character like Cordelia on Bariar, this very different place from where she grew up. And so you get to have that contrast between the very liberal-minded beta colony, you know, technological, to the very conservative, feudalistic Bariar. It's a good contrast.
Right. Kudelka and Drushnikovi are my favorite characters, and were the ones that really spoke to me as a teenager. And I'll talk about that too and get into the spoilers.
Usually I talk about, you know, comps or like who might like this novel based on other series. And we talked about that with the Vore game, but if you have any ideas.
Yeah. I've been enjoying, Adrian Tchaikovsky lately, and I get kind of a similar vibe from him. I think, if you like his work, you may like Bariar. He falls, I think, in a similar place on the serious to lighthearted spectrum.
Yeah.
Becky Chambers' Wayfarer series is also a great space opera with themes of people from different cultures coming to, you know, having some cultural conflict and coming to understand each other.
Yeah.
Also maybe John Scalzi's Interdependency series has some similarities.
Yeah. And of course, Dan Morin with his books has drawn direct inspiration from the Vorkosigan saga. So
I haven't actually read any of his work. I know Scott and Mark from the Narrated podcast do both really like his work.
Yeah, I think they had him on for an episode.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, the Galactic Cold War series. Very fun. Cool. He's got another one coming out in just a couple months, I think. So looking forward to that. Anything else you want to cover before we dive into spoilers?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, let's move straight over into spoilers and we talk about whatever you want to hit.
Sure. So I think when I first fell for in Bariar when I read it as a teenager was exploration of gender roles. As a kid playing make-believe games about my favorite sci-fi shows, I generally had to take the man's role to be the action hero.
Right.
And so, you know, Cordelia is a great action hero herself. And I love how she kind of turns the conservative society of Bariar on its head. But even more than Cordelia, Drushnikovi is a character who really spoke to me, a young woman who becomes Cordelia's personal bodyguard. And then the relationship that she has with Lieutenant Kadelka also was something that really worked for me.
Yeah.
You know, as a girl who didn't identify as a princess in a castle wanting to be saved, like his, and he's also struggling with the sort of narrow definitions of masculinity on Bariar and how he no longer feels like he fits into them as a wounded veteran.
Kudelka's injuries, you know, kind of bring up that whole suspicion of mutations and disabilities on Bariar. And they're very in the, like, well, your kid has, you know, some kind of disability, so just leave him on a hillside someplace and let nature take care of it,
right.
Which is horrifying. But it's like a Spartan thing almost in Bariar. And
yeah,
so that's important for how Miles is treated.
It is. And I think ableism has been a big theme throughout this whole series, both as through the characters of Kudelka and Miles, and also I think it's been a long time since I read it, but Falling Free, which is in the same universe.
The Quaddies.
So I loved the scene where Drew and Cordelia go shopping for the sword stick for Kudelka.
Yeah.
And Drew thinks they're going to go clothes shopping, and then she gets excited when it's about weapons instead. And I mean, all these, you know, there's a ton of great feminist science fiction coming out.
Yeah.
But you know, this was some of the first that I encountered.
And Drushnikovi is interesting too, because like, she's this very, very competent warrior.
Yes.
On a planet that has no use for her in that role. And yet it does, right? She can be a guard to a woman, you know, a bodyguard to a woman. And so I love the fact that she gets to kind of rebel against the role that she's been placed in, and is so willing when Cordelia ultimately says, let's get a band together and go on a rescue operation.
Right.
Because the thing that she's so upset about is essentially Corrine, the emperor's widow, and Gregor's the emperor's mother, is considered essentially not important. And Drew is like, nope, that's not okay. She is important. We should try to rescue her.
Right. Right. And Corrine's a fascinating character too, because she was in a abusive relationship with the crown prince. And then she was in another abusive relationship with Count Verdarian, who is, you know, staging this coup. And she really just believes this is her station in life. And she's resigned to it until Cordelia hands her son's shoe, and she realizes that he's still alive.
Right. It's interesting too how institutionalized Drushnikovi is, because she's like, well, she's sleeping with Verdarian, therefore, you know, she's on his side. And Cordelia's like, I think she's doing what she has to do to survive.
Right.
And so she's much more, no, I think when I hand her this shoe, the other, you know, the metaphorical shoe will drop, right?
Right.
Only it's a literal one in this case. I want to talk about Cordelia because she's such a good character. And you know, she comes in and out of the novels, because a lot of the novels focus on Miles, right? So that's why I really enjoyed Gentleman Joel and the Red Queen, because it's another Cordelia novel. But she's so great, because I don't think she underestimates her abilities, but she doesn't consider herself a soldier, right? She was a captain of the expeditionary force, like a scientist almost. But I love the way Errol calls her dear captain, and the fact that she calls him on it at some point and says, is this just a diminutive, or do you mean it? Do you actually, you know, are you honoring my title there? Or are you just saying it as a pet name? They have different ideas about what needs to happen.
Right. And I do get the impression that he truly respects her.
I think so too.
Even though sometimes he is, you know, he's a product of his society, and sometimes he's kind of stuck in that inside the box thinking.
Yeah, about how even though he's dangerously done. Progressive, according to his father.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a thing, right? That women who in our society who have titles like doctor or MD and that kind of stuff, a lot of times men, when talking to them, don't use the appropriate titles. Right. I don't know if they're threatened by it or what. I was watching one of my favorite YouTube channels is Mama Dr. Jones, and you know, she'll get in trouble with school boards and that kind of stuff for sex education materials or something, and they never refer to her as, you know, MD. And she's like, you jerks, you know, just use the title. There's a reason, you know, I worked hard for it.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's definitely a thing. I love the way, you know, kind of early on, Cordelia overhears some people badmouthing Errol. It's just not letting it happen. Dresses him down really nicely.
She dresses down. She let it go actually when they were badmouthing Errol.
That's right.
She dressed them down when they started badmouthing Koudelka.
That's right. That's right.
When they,
yeah, that's yeah, really early in the book. It was a couple weeks ago for me. So
when they made a comment about his disability,
disability earned in on the field of battle.
Right.
You would think, I don't know, I guess, like, I would think that a warlike society, you know, like Beriar would honor injured veterans, but I, you know, we don't do a great job of it either, I suppose.
Right.
I had remembered that the Saltoxin attack was directly related to the coup, which I guess in the end it was, right? We do find out eventually that it was.
We find out that Vordarian helped them do it. Like he kind of, they wanted revenge and he said, oh great, you know, this is going to work well with my plans, you know.
Yeah.
Here, I'll get you what you need to do it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, it wasn't completely his doing, but he definitely was involved.
Yeah. I didn't remember that was all connected to a duel that ended up with an execution, which I'm just like, I mean, you don't have to go back very far in our history to where dueling was a thing, to where like, you know, you watch Hamilton or something and you see the duels and you're like, really, you can't just apologize? You know, we can't just shake hands or just move on. I don't understand.
So one of the things that I am struck by rereading it now, which it's not that I didn't notice it at the time, but it didn't mean as much to me when I was younger, is how much of this book is about motherhood and pregnancy and childbirth and also reproductive care and options.
Yeah, and the Baton view on this is like, why would you put yourself through all that?
Right.
We have uterine replicators.
Right, right. If you feel like doing it, you know, more power to you, but
sure, yeah.
You know, no shame for not doing it.
Right. Well, and just, you know, the barrier and hang-ups on sex too, where you have the thing where Koudelka has no idea what consent is. And the fact that if Drushnikovy could have turned him into a pretzel if she wasn't consenting.
Right. I've thought about that scene a lot over the years. I'm still not sure like exactly what I think of it, but it was really interesting where, you know, Ku and Drew have this kind of developing relationship and then one day they end up in a position where they're in the same place and they're both turned on and they have sex. And then he comes to her days later and apologizes for not asking for consent and believes that he's raped her. And, and she's, you know, she's furious because that he even thinks that he possibly could have overpowered her.
Yeah.
But there's also part of him wants to have overpowered her. There's a kind of fragile masculinity thing going on there where he wants to believe that he could have raped her, which is kind of disturbing.
Yeah, very. You also, so going back to the whole mutation thing, right? You have this, after the Saltoxin attack, Baton technology allows them to do a placental transfer over to the uterine replicator. And then there's this Dr. Fodden, I think, Vagan, who's able to start doing some treatments to try to repair the damage. And Count Pyotr, Errol's father, of course, is horrified by this because, you know, there's no way that this is going to work and we're going to have a freak in our family. And that all that stuff that happens is really compelling to me about the, you know, the arguments where Errol's like, I'm going to side with my wife on this. And of course,
Pyotr even tries to to dump the replicator himself. Like he goes in, marches in and demands to have it emptied.
Right. Yep. To do what he thinks is the right thing. And of course, you know, Errol siding with Cordelia on this is, in Piotr's eyes, of course, a sign of his weakness. Because why would you consider a woman's opinion, I guess?
Well, and because why, and because he thinks it's weakening the family line.
Right. Yeah. And he's not thinking about the fact that there may not be any other heirs.
Right.
I do like ultimately where things come out with the relationship between Piotr and Miles down the line.
Yes. And even by the end of Barriar, they are starting to, Piotr's starting to see Miles as valuable.
Yeah. It would have been a strange place to start in, like, The Warrior's Apprentice, where it starts in there, where you can see there's already a relationship between them if that epilogue hadn't happened in this book.
Right.
But then, of course, everything changes because the coup attempt happens, and then you get to see Piotr and his, you know, man of war, man of action, kind of, you know, the good parts of him.
Right.
To his credit, he does his best to help Cordelia escape the situation.
Yes. I realized one of the things I noticed on the reread is that I had no memory at all of the whole sequence where Cordelia was on the run with Gregor and being helped by the mail carrier and hiding in some caves. Yeah. And that just didn't stick with me at all over the years somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And if there's a slow part in the book, that is a little, it kind of, you know, journey into the forest, you know, it's not as slow as like The Hobbit, but it's similar stuff, you know, when you're on foot or on horseback.
Yeah. The mail carrier was kind of a,
yeah,
good character, though. He was,
yeah, definitely,
this crusty old guy who rides through the mountains all day.
Yeah. Yeah. And has to, you know, figure out how to help them out and still make his appointments so that there's no suspicion.
Right. Right.
The coup attempt is just like, I was reading it and I was like, wow, this is a perfect midpoint of the book. And I was like, 49%. Yep. I guess that's the midpoint of the book. So really, really well structured, I guess I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's a very, very tight, well-told story. And just the overall, the pacing is really good.
Yeah. I also like that, you know, I mentioned Bothari earlier, where he's this, you know, strange mechanism kind of character, where he's like a monster, but a useful one. But Cordelia, I think, sees him as redeemable in some way because of the events of Shards of Honor. And you find out that he's had this horrifying repression treatment or something that washed away his memory of a lot of those events. And so he doesn't know what he did. And
he doesn't even know what happened.
Yeah. He doesn't know what happened. And it's eating away at his brain thinking, did I rape Cordelia?
Right.
Because he remembers enough that was something that was on the table in Shards of Honor. So if you're going to read Shards of Honor, by the way, sexual violence.
Yeah.
I like that she is kind of, she works with him and, you know, it tries to, and she's horrified. Of course, she's the fish out of water, horrified by what the Barriarans did to him in those treatments, you know, make him forget rather than do counseling, you know, actually talk to someone about it, talk about feelings and that kind of stuff.
Right. Although it doesn't sound like the Badens have it perfect either.
No.
Based on how she was treated after the war. That was in Shards of Honor. Not in Barriar, but that she, when she went back, having fallen in love with Errol, they, like, the Baden authorities didn't believe that she hadn't been brainwashed and were really trying to prove that.
Yeah. But I love the moment when, you know, essentially, so what happens is Errol and Cordelia both escape the coup attempt. They get safe through the coup attempt and come back together eventually. And they find that Vordarian has hostages. And one of the hostages he has is Miles and his replicator.
Right. And they're not even sure whether he knows he has a hostage.
Right.
Whether he knows that Miles is a living being, that there's a living being in there.
Right. And I think eventually they come to know that, yes, indeed, he has this and he knows what it is. And he also has Karin and... Mm-hmm. And other, you know, loved ones of some of the counts and lords, right? And so there's the strategizing going on where Errol is attempting to gather forces to try and figure out how to fight this out. And Cordelia realizes there is a ticking clock on the uterine replicator. They only have a few days before it's non-viable anymore, before the...
It has to be serviced
again. It needs to be serviced, right? It needs nutrients and, mm-hmm. and waste flushed out of it. And she basically comes to realize Errol... I mean, I can kind of understand his perspective. He doesn't think that he can just drop everything to go rescue his son.
Right.
He needs to prioritize, you know, other people's
hostages. Right. He doesn't think that would look good.
Right. Well, and, you know, the other Barry Irons would be like, "What? You're rescuing what? You're rescuing your mutated son?" And like that wouldn't work for him as regent. And so she realizes, okay, if something's going to get done, I got to do it myself. And I love that moment where she realizes she needs somebody like Bothari. She needs Drushnikovy because she knows the palace.
Right.
And you know, she basically
because she's a soldier. Because she's a very competent,
extreme
fighter also.
Yeah. 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 Her knowledge and her skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And she basically asks, or you know, says to Bothari, "Look, I need you with me. Can you do this?" And he says, "Well, if you recall, the regent assigned me to you, and he never countermanded that order."
Right.
And I just love that. I think it was actually
Piotr said, "Obey her voice as my own," because he's employed by Piotr.
Yeah.
At this point, he's like a liveried, retainer.
Armsman.
He's a liveried armsman for Piotr, and so Piotr said, when he sent them off in the woods together, he said, "Obey her voice as my own."
That's right. That's right.
And he never countermanded that order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's like, technically, according to the fine print, I'm still under your command. And you can see there's a twinkle in his eye when he's doing that. And my only fear with these novels is I'm surprised there hasn't been any media adapted from this, because there's so much to mine in this series. Yeah. But I feel
it's such a beloved series. I mean, it won best series the first time best series existed.
Yeah.
in the Hugos.
I figure if they ever do this, they're not going to count. They're not going to cast anyone ugly enough to be a real Bothari.
For sure. Yeah.
The Dave Bautista will play him, you know.
I also enjoyed that Kudelka ended up with them on that, on the heist, which was that basically he caught them leaving and they kidnapped him and bonked him on the head and took him along.
Yeah.
And then he ended up being very valuable, and it was his chance to be the action hero again too, because he ended up being the one to get Lady Vorpetril out.
And that ends up being quite important later. And of course, you know, Alice Vorpetril is this great character in there as well. Yeah. And you feel kind of bad about what happens with her husband, but that whole scene is very exciting when they're going to rescue her.
Right. And then she ends up giving birth without any medical care to speak of, except for Bothari, who turns
out Bothari is midwife. Yeah.
No, yes. Which was foreshadowed in the beginning of the book. They actually, Cordelia made a comment about how, you know, the reproductive care on Barriar was so, primitive. Oh, can you imagine both, you know, giving birth in the middle of, I don't know, I don't remember exactly what she said, but she specifically said Bothari as midwife.
Oh, really?
And then,
I didn't remember that.
And then that actually happened.
Yeah. Yep. But it reminds me of the Star Trek The Next Generation episode where Keiko is giving birth and Worf is the the labor coach, right? You may now give birth.
And Kudelka says, "Is there something you can do to just slow that down?" And Alice says, "The next time you're throwing up, could you just close your mouth and swallow hard?"
Right. Yeah. My mother for years, she's, you know, retired now, was a postpartum nurse in the hospital. So she worked with newborns. And then two of my older sisters were both childbirth educators. And my oldest sister, Erin, is a doula. Mm-hmm. And so there's, anytime you get the women in my family together, it within 5 minutes, they're talking about childbirth stories. I don't think they have doulas on Barriar. I think they have impatient male doctors who are like, "Come on, just enough with the histrionics, pop that baby out." Yep.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely seems to be the case.
Yeah. The thing that I like also in this, in terms of the plotting of the novel, is everything about the little guerrilla raid that they set up makes perfect sense. Like, you understand that Errol is duty bound to not give into the hostage situation for his son, not to just rush in there rashly. And so his hands are kind of tied. And the decision that Cordelia makes perfect sense. The fact that, Drushnikovy's views on, I can't believe they're just writing Kareen off.
Right.
Like she's not important. Mm-hmm. And then Bothari just kind of being attached to Cordelia. Like that, all of that makes perfect sense. And then, like you said, the role for Kudelka once he comes along and they're like, look, we're in enemy territory at this point. What are you going to do?
Right. Right, exactly. And then he turns out to be really useful, both in helping with Alice and her baby, but also with getting them into the territory, because it turns out that his father was a grocer, which he doesn't mention because that's apparently not a high prestige job that that he's willing to admit to in the military.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, this is one of those things where, like, the whole idea of different classes of people, like, I have such a hard time with the idea that warlords are better than grocers.
Right. I mean, we don't have, I think the idea of like a monarchy doesn't fit well into American society, but we certainly have class.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't, like, if I'm watching like Downton Abbey or something, right? The idea that the servant class, you know, thinks that the fancy people are better than them in some way. And I think, no, they're just richer and more idle. So, although we've been watching the Gilded Age on HBO Max, and there's definitely, this is, you know, I don't know, 1880s in the US, there's this war between the old money and the new money people. And I think, why is this a thing? Why do you think it's more impressive that you inherited your money than that he earned it?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's some of what, I mean, I don't know, Beta Colony is supposed to be, I think, you know, what I think if you look at sort of science fiction as being about the time that it's written in.
Yeah.
You know, Beta Colony is sort of to the left of the US in the 90s and Barriar is to the right. And, you know, they're sort of looking at that tension between those two as, you know, exploring issues that were current.
Yeah.
At the time they're starting. There was sort of the discussion about gay rights was much earlier in its stages at that time than it is now. The fact that Errol is bisexual is something that was to Cordelia from Beta Colony not a big deal at all. And, you know, the Count Vardarian tries to drop it on her like it's this bomb that she, you know, did you know your husband's bisexual?
Yeah.
Like it's this, you know, huge scandal. And she's like, whatever. Although she says, he was bisexual. Now he's monogamous, which isn't how sexuality works. But it was also the early 90s.
It's not apples to apples either, right? I mean, anybody can be monogamous.
Right, exactly.
Doesn't change the orientation.
Right, exactly. So, but...
I did like that. I mean, she's such a forceful, forceful personality. I'm not saying that, I mean, I'm sure that the Vor men who interact with her think that she's terribly bitchy, because of course she's assertive and smart and, has a will and therefore they're going to put all kinds of negative things on that. Like Piotr does, you know, saying that Errol is whipped basically. Right. I mean, there's a reason that, I mean, we have those thoughts in our society, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not coming from, you know, it's not science fiction in that sense.
It's not coming from nothing.
Yeah. Right. It's not coming from nothing.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting to think of the novel in the 90s, early 90s context, right? Moving out of the Bush years into the Clinton years and kind of that shift out of the Reagan Bush moral majority days. And I remember, you know, I was at a conservative Christian college at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, I remember the suspicion of this, the liberal swing in American politics. And now I lived in Oregon for 25 years and feel like I'm uncomfortably to the left of my conservative friends and to the right of my liberal friends. And I can displease everyone. But I don't know. Our society doesn't make it comfortable for anybody to be kind of moderate. And maybe it's just our, you know, social media kind of exacerbates the divide.
It does.
But yeah, I love the interactions with Cordelia, with those chuckleheads at the beginning making fun of Kudelka, and then the interaction with Verderian where he's trying to get under her skin and just completely failing.
Yeah.
And wasn't she the one who went to Errol or Ilion or Negri? I can't remember. She went to one of them and said, you need to put Verderian higher up on your list.
Yes. Yes, she did. And that was after that conversation.
Yeah.
Because she realized that he was trying to undermine their marriage and.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very, very sharp, very with it. And if people just listened to her, maybe they could have avoided something. And it does turn out that, you know, they were listening and pursuing that. It's just, they were trying to do it quietly and protect Beriar as much as possible. And I really enjoy that when she's talking with Errol about, you know, what is the outcome of this? Let's say we can put down this rebellion. And he's really thinking about how do we do this with the least damage to our society, right? There's some counts that are going to have to get strung up or whatever horrifying methods of execution that they have. But they'll be able to do a blanket pardon for the men who are just following orders, which, I don't know, that only goes so far.
Right.
But in a society like that, right, where you're very much, it's drilled into you that, you know, you listen to your warlords and you follow them, you can understand how that is more tenable to say, okay, well, that was their role and they were fulfilling their role and we're not going to give them a hard time for it.
And then she gets them out of it completely in the end.
Yes. Yeah.
By doing some winter fair shopping.
Yes. I love that. That's such a great moment where well, first of all, that, you know, she has been telling Bothari the whole time, like, I'll tell you when it's okay to kill someone.
Right.
And so then when you get to that moment, she's like, execute this man. He's just like, yes, milady. And then, you know, she looks around, finds a shopping bag. And I love that when she comes into the big meeting of all the
Situation
war
room.
Yeah, the Situation room. And Piotr's like, good God, woman, what are you doing? What have you been doing? And she says, shopping, and drops the bag on the table.
And the head rolls out.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. And comes up, like, face up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great moment. Mm-hmm. The end of this book absolutely just crashes by. It goes so fast. I was like, nope, I'm not. I know it's 12:30, but I'm finishing this book.
Yeah, but you're right. It really holds up. I mean, the whole not just, you know, the character motivations that get them all there, and also, you know, the heist itself, like the fact that Drew would know about the castle and, you know, how to get the palace and how to get in and out. And, you know, there's pretty much everybody's role makes sense. That was definitely something that I was worried about because it had been so long since I read it. And I was like, well, you know, I've read a lot more now and I'm a lot older. And am I going to think that something about this is silly? And I really didn't. It really held up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's also, you know, realistic about how all of that goes down, because here at Druzhnikovia is this very capable person, and you see it earlier when she gets in on the fights that they have going on. They're having just some friendly matches, right? And she gets matched up against Bothari. And so, you know, she's super competent. And yet when they go in to rescue the Vorpatrols, you know, it doesn't go perfectly. And she's really struggling with, I hesitated and Padma Vorpatril got killed. And Cordelia is very quick. She's like, there were like 9 nerve disruptors aimed at that guy.
Right.
You know, your hesitation did not kill him.
Right.
It was his tactical error that caused it. Because, you know, here his wife is basically in labor.
Right. And, so he's not thinking straight because...
No, he's not thinking straight. And he's thinking like a Beriarin. I need somebody else to help me with this. And, you know, my wife can't just give birth. I can't be the one to deliver this baby.
Right.
Which you can understand that. But on the other hand, she did a good job.
She did.
Yeah. So he didn't have to make that decision. And Druzhnikovia was trying to take on some of the guilt for something that he was really responsible for. But it's still sad.
Yes.
I had forgotten, actually, about the Vorpatril connection, and you know, because Ivan's such a fun character in right. the Miles books, the Lothario cousin of Miles. Mm-hmm. So this is such a fun book to read after having read the whole series, because you get the origin stories for both Miles and
right.
And for Ivan, and also for the Kudelka girls, right?
Right.
I mean, this is pre-Kudelka girls, but because I was thinking as I was reading this, like, does Kudelka come into the rest of these novels? And I started looking up lists of characters, and I'm like, oh, okay. His daughters are big characters.
Right. And the whole, just everything that happened between Kudelka and Druzhnikovy, man, when I read that so, I read those scenes so many times in my teens and 20s that even now, like, I could, like, listening to the audiobook, I could hear the dialogue, lines of dialogue coming before they got there.
Oh, nice.
You guys still pretty much have those scenes memorized, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's that whole other part where, you know, Cordelia is just like, dang it, I'm getting these two together.
Yes,
I don't care
yes.
what I have to do.
Yes. Well, she asks about how it's done, and they talked about having a go-between.
Right.
And then she gets up off the couch, and Kudelka says, where are you going? And she says, between.
Right. Yeah, that's really well done. Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about the audiobooks for these.
Sure.
Was yours narrated by Grover Gardner?
Yes.
Like all the ones that I've listened to are narrated by Grover Gardner, and he does a great job of differentiating the characters, because he has a really nice – I mean, I don't know. I always wonder about this. Like, as a man listening to this, when he's voicing the female characters, it works for me. Because basically what he does is he gruffs up his voice for somebody like Piotr and Errol or
right.
Bothari, and lightens it a little bit for the female characters. But it, I don't know, completely works for me. And I think the audiobooks are fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoy the audiobooks for sure.
And I mean, I'd listen to them again. I should just restart the series. Just, I don't know. Sometimes you need some fun in your life.
it's a really fun series.
Yeah. I think I've come to the end of my notes.
One of the things I wanted to say was around the time I was rereading, someone put a question on Twitter about what's your favorite weapon in a sci-fi or fantasy story?
Yeah.
And I was thinking that I think it's Kudelka's sword stick, because yes. it plays such a big role in the story.
You know, it does,
the whole great sequence where Cordelia and Drew buy it, and then there's the way that they present it to him, but then he can't actually own it because he's not Vor, and
right.
and then it ends up being the thing that ends the coup.
Yeah. How did Errol work around that?
Because he said he bought it because it was because Cordelia bought it. So he paid for it, which meant he owned it, so he could issue it to Kudelka.
Gotcha. Okay.
As like out of his, like, I am issuing you this, my personal weapon.
Right. Out of my armory.
Out of my armory to carry. Right.
Okay. Yeah. And that's a fun thing. And I can't remember if the sword stick ever comes back up in the series, because it's, you know, it's probably in a museum someplace, right?
Right.
Next to the mummified head of Valeria.
Right.
And you know, this book is a fun intro for Gregor as well, who, if you've read the Vor game,
yes.
you know, he's now he's a young adult.
Right.
Or maybe he's not even an adult. I can't remember. Maybe he's in his teens. But yeah. Yeah. And it's very sad. I didn't remember all the details about what had happened with his parents. I remember that his father was mad, but,
right.
But I didn't remember what had happened to his mother. So I was quite saddened when that occurred.
Yeah. Oh, I also wanted to mention, I know the Hugo Girl podcast got some flack for reading Barrier as a standalone and not reading Shards of Honor first.
Yeah, that pissed me off.
And I think that's a completely valid way to do it. I didn't know Shards of Honor existed for a few years until a few years after I read Barrier, and I still thought Barrier was, you know, I still totally understood it and thought it was great. And yeah, I don't think it's necessary. I think you can. I think Lois McMaster-Bujold even said that she wrote the series in such a way where you could come in at any point, pretty much.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she includes kind of a reading order at the back end mm-hmm. of all the books that I have of hers, where she's like, you know, you can read them all as standalones, but if you want different entry points into the series, you could come in here, there, you know, another place.
Right.
But you're probably going to get more out of Mirror Dance if you've read Brothers in Arms first. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get more out of Memory if you've read Komar, or, you know, all these other ones. And I mean, there's a lot of gatekeeping in science fiction. And so
yes, there is.
The idea that somebody's going to give them a hard time because they didn't know some details right. from Shards of Honor when they were reading Barrier.
Yeah.
I mean, I decided when I did this, this whole project with reading all the Hugos was any of them that were further on in a series, I would read up to that point to get there. Right. And sometimes I've regretted it, right? I'm doing the Mars books soon. And so I've been reading Red Mars and questioning all my life choices. Yeah. And so with that one in particular, because right. that book has been a struggle with me for years, right. I really considered maybe I'll just jump into the second book and just call it good. But where I can, I like to do the homework if I can fit it in. But you shouldn't be required to do that. And I mean, I only read the book after reading Shards of Honor. So I don't know how it would be reading it as a standalone. I do know that in reading it this time, I didn't go back and reread Shards of Honor. After I finished Barrier, I went and read the Wikipedia entry for Shards of Honor just because I was like, okay, what happened in that one?
Right.
But yeah, you read them however you want and have fun.
Yep.
But that was one of those cases too, where you could easily say on social media, oh, you would have gotten a lot more out of this if you read Shards of Honor first, rather than saying it's so disappointing that, right. that they didn't read Shards of Honor first.
Yes, I'm like, exactly.
Really? I mean,
exactly. And there's, you know, people have the amount of time they have to read.
Exactly.
I am not a fast reader. And yeah,
me neither.
For a long time, I loved to read science fiction and fantasy, but I didn't participate very much in conversation because I felt like I was never, you know, caught up or hadn't read the canon or whatever.
Sure.
A few years ago, I discovered audiobooks and I'm officially obsessed. And now like every, you know, it's squeezed into all the, like, you know, dishwashing and
right.
laundry
yeah, me too.
Doing and all that time is now reading time. And so yeah. I do read quite a bit. But you don't have to in order to
no.
be a fan of the genre.
No, you don't. And like I got somebody on iTunes or Apple Podcasts put in a review saying that, you know, that I didn't do enough research. I'm like, I mean, that's my thing. That's my whole thing. I'm approaching this from a fan level.
Right.
I've never presented this podcast as the definitive take on any of these works. And so, yeah, I'm not doing a bunch of research into the history of the author or the sociological backgrounds of any of these works. I'm reading
letting
it and talking about what my thoughts are. And if my guest wants to bring in the politics or whatever, or other research, great. But if it's just two people who read a book and enjoyed it and talking about it, that's great too. So yeah. But like I said, gatekeeping,
yeah.
you know, and part of it I get, right? If there's a book that you absolutely love and then you listen to a podcast and somebody totally missed the boat on it, according to you, I can understand how that can be frustrating. It is what it is. Anything else to say about Barrier?
I think I'm at the end of my notes too.
All right. Well, so in terms of final thoughts for me, very enjoyable book, very enjoyable series. So if you haven't checked these out, you've got a lot of enjoyable reading ahead of you. I think I finally do have a guest for the final Vorkosigan novel, which is my nephew, because I got him hooked on this series.
Nice.
And so every time I go and visit him, because they just live an hour north of us. Like, hey, did you start reading Mirror Dance yet? He's like, nope. And I'm like, well, just hold off. I'll fit you in this fall. So what about you? Final thoughts?
I mean, this whole series is really fun. And I love the Cordelia books the best. And this is my favorite of the series.
Nice. All right. So before we sign off, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Narrated Podcast, which has a website, which is, I think, narratedpodcast.com. Let me just check that. Yes, it is narratedpodcast.com. There's no spaces or underscores or anything. I am also on Twitter as @Lisa_JM. And Narrated also is on Twitter.
_Narrated, I believe,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll put all those links in the show notes.
Okay. Great.
Cool. Well, Lisa, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for being patient. I know it's been a while since you volunteered. That's kind of the way it always works.
Sure, no worries. It was really fun. It's good talking to you.
And then being patient with my not getting the novel read. My son gave me a book for Christmas, so I had to read it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, thanks for doing this. This was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Lisa, and I will put all her links in the show notes. Be sure to check that out. I do want to remind you the Hugo Award nominations are open right now. They're open until March 15th. So after this episode comes out, you still have some time. If you want to nominate this program or Hugo Girl or any number of other things, nominate the things that you like. And if you like this podcast, I'd appreciate if you would add me to the ballot. I also want to send out a message here saying that I have about 7 titles left on the list to be claimed. So if you want to, if you've been waiting to the last minute, you're getting towards the last minute. So make sure to send me a note, feedback@hugospodcast.com, or go up to Hugo's podcast and fill out the contact form. That's how Lisa got a hold of me. Or find me, you know, send me a message on Twitter @Hugo's podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/Hugo's podcast and sign up to support there. I actually recently finally did some exclusive content. I actually did a full episode breaking down the entire Ender series, including the speaker series and the Shadow series, because I just recently read The Last Shadow, which is the last book in that series. And so I did an episode there for patrons. And so if you'd like to check that out, you can sign up for $1 and get that episode. I also want to mention that I recorded this episode using Zencastr. It's a very cool thing for podcasters because I get to hit record on my end and then both my track and my guest's track end up in my Dropbox. Super easy for me to use. It's very convenient for doing a podcast like this. So if you're interested in a tool like that, go to zencastr.com and check them out. Okay, I think that will do it for this episode. So thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Kuske.